Welcome to the This Week in Rays Baseball podcast.
Coming up today, you'll hear from Eric Neander on some more minor league signings. We'll catch up with Chris Archer, hear from some of the Ted Williams Hall of Fame honorees, and find out what Australia was like for some Rays minor league players.
This is Rays Radio. Now here's your host, Neil Solons.
Thanks for joining us this Tuesday, February 3rd. We're less than 3 weeks from spring training. The Rays have announced several more invites to Major League Camp, bringing the total players expected to 62. So, let's begin there.
It's time to go inside the operating room and take a look at Rays baseball operations.
And we kick off our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast with Vice President of Baseball Operations, Eric Neander. Eric, hard to believe we're now less than 3 weeks away from the start of spring training. And the thing that we wanted to focus on is the latest additions to those coming to camp. You're up to 62, and probably the biggest name was Ronald Belisario. How did it come about, and how does he kind of fit into the fight for bullpen spots at this point?
Yeah, also can't believe it's already February and we're weeks away from spring training, but excited about looking forward and, you know, getting on the field. As for Belisario himself, someone that, you know, is a little bit of a different profile than the guys we currently have in our pen or in camp with us, much more of a ground ball heavy type of profile, a very difficult at bat on a righty, someone that's been very durable, someone that... you know, we think just provides a different dynamic that we're excited to have in camp and compete for a spot. He is someone that we have, you know, had our eye on for some time and are excited that we had the opportunity to bring him in.
And one of the other interesting names with the trades of Yanel Escobar and Ben Zobrist was Alexi Casilla, a switch-hitting infielder. How does he fit into the mix in terms of competing for a spot come spring training?
Yeah, Alexi is someone that has, you know, he's a veteran, major league player. He spent most of last year with Norfolk, and he is someone that, you know, has some speed, is a very good defender, you know, can do some different things on offense, not a power threat, but someone that can move the ball around, can do a lot of little things to help a team win, and we're excited to have him come into camp and compete for a spot. How it all plays out, you know, remains to be seen. We're pretty excited about the group we have. We'll keep our eyes open to other possibilities as we move forward, but we do think he's a nice option to come in and to compete for our middle infield situation.
And we'll get to the other things you try and do in just a second, because one of the other individuals who was announced got an invite was the key piece in the Ben Zobrist trade, in Daniel Robertson. How important is it for him to get a closer look from you guys, to kind of see him up close? I know he wasn't able to get to the winter development camp because of timing.
Yeah, I think it's important. You know, Daniel was invited to camp with Oakland and felt it was important to give him that same opportunity with us here. And not having seen him at our winter development camp, getting a chance to see him for an extended period of time now, to be around our, you know, our major league camp will, I think, be a good development experience for him. It'll give him a little bit more time to get familiar with our staff and how we do things. I think naturally when you bring someone in that's new and that has the ability, the talent he has, it's certainly an exciting thing. But really, we're just looking to get to know him. And, you know, there's no pressure on him coming into a situation like this.
In his case, as you mentioned, he was invited to A's camp, so it made sense to reciprocate. How is that fine line, though, deciding when a young player is ready, maybe not physically, but maybe more emotionally, how they'll handle their first trip to Major League camp, ostensibly if they're not expected to be on the big league roster that year?
Yeah, I think there's different ways that people can go about it. Ideally, you know, it's someone that comes in with an understanding that, okay, this probably isn't my time. But there are a lot of people here that have experience above and beyond what I've had in my career to this point. And ideally, it's something where it can be observational, where they get to look at Evan Longoria. They get to look at, you know, Alex Cobb, Chris Archer, these guys that have had these experiences above them, and that have really established a routine and a sense of professionalism for how they do things. And ideally, those are the things that they take away from it. So when they are, you know, sent back out of camp, obviously they've hopefully have made a good impression, you know, with our older players and have gone about things the right way, but they take something with them that gives them a better sense for how they need to continue to go about their business as they develop.
Again, we're chatting with Eric Neander. He is Vice President of Baseball Operations for the Rays on our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. And Eric, with this just a little over a couple of weeks before the start of spring training, how is your time now allotted? I'm sure that in November, December, January, well, in addition to a manager search, but normally you're focusing more on shaping the roster versus the guys you do have. How's that split now? How much more time are you spending on getting ready for opening day and getting ready for the guys you do have?
Prior to all of that, a little bit more family time right now, trying to squeeze that in. That's been a challenge for most of the winter here, but trying to take a few weeks here to squeeze that in. But really, it's, you know, the roster, our expected level of competitiveness, I think we have a good sense for where we're at. So really, it's more fine-tuning. Matt has used the word tweaking all winter. I think we are to a point now where, you know, tweaking is probably the most that we will do moving forward. You know, it's about getting the staff ready to go. You know, having a new manager and some new coaches on the staff, making sure that they are fully prepared to hit the ground running, making sure that that first impression when we all get to camp is, you know, there's a lot of experienced people on our staff, but there are some new faces in different roles, making sure that that first impression is as strong as possible. And so that's really our focus right now, you know, in addition to keeping our eyes open for other opportunities that come up player-wise. That's really where we're looking at. It's much more about getting things ready and all the fine details in place for camp and going into the season.
And from a numbers standpoint, you're at 62 right now. Where is that fine line between not enough in terms of bodies for games and you know, all kinds of drills, and too many? Do you need 3-4 more guys in camp, and are they highlighted in specific areas?
I think the fine line is right about where we're at. you know, it might be a player or two on top if the right opportunities present themselves. And if they don't, I think our numbers where we are currently are in a pretty good spot. So, you know, we would never be so rigid to say this is our max numbers, and if someone comes along that we think has a chance to help us, we would never, you know, close the door on that. So we'll continue to be open-minded, but we feel good with the numbers and, more importantly, the players that we have in camp right now.
Well, best of luck. We appreciate a few minutes, and enjoy the family time you do get during these final couple weeks before spring training starts.
Thanks. Certainly will.
That's Rays Vice President of Baseball Operations Eric Neander on our Inside the Operating Room segment, detailing the minor league signings of Ronald Belisario and Alexi Casilla, as well as the decision to have Daniel Robertson attend big league camp. Now, this past weekend, several players were at Tropicana Field for the Ted Williams Hitters Hall of Fame annual dinner. The event also was publicized as Dinner with Alex Cobb and Friends. One of those friends was Chris Archer, and I chatted with Chris about being part of the dinner.
It's a pretty big honor to be asked to be a guest, to help attract the local fans to come. Just considering last year Craig Biggio was here, and he's in the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown as well. So Doc Gooden, who I've always looked up to, Tim Raines is here this year. It's just awesome to be a part of the history of baseball and not just the current great greats like David Price and James Shields and Alex Cobb, but also to be able to meet Wade Boggs and just have a casual conversation, not really about baseball, just about life and different life experiences that we've all had. And it just helps you grow as a person. So there's several reasons why I like being here.
You mentioned life experiences, and you had an incredible one. What do you care to share with the Rays fans about what you experienced in South Africa in December?
I'd say just a genuine love and passion for life. They over here would be considered less fortunate. But, you know, as far as they're concerned, their world's perfect. So it just gives you a different outlook on life. You appreciate the smaller things a lot more, knowing that people are happy with less material things than you have.
What did you learn about yourself from an experience like that?
Really just to not take family and time with close friends, don't take that time for granted, because it's so easy to, and it's so easy not to be in the moment with all this technology distracting you. But, you know, there's time for video games if that's what you like, and there's a time for social media if that's how you get your news and stuff. But there's also needs to be the majority of your time needs to be focused on the present moment. And I saw a lot of that there. So it's something that I brought back with me to be more conscious of than I am, even am today.
You're now back in Tampa Bay. Presently, you've got a new manager. How much have you gotten to know Kevin, and what do you like so far?
I like his youth. I like his open-mindedness. I like the fact that he played for, you know, parts of 7 or 8 seasons in the big leagues. All these things are going to be important to our long-term success as an organization. The fact that he was a catcher, he knows how to communicate with pitchers on a different level. So, you know, and he's just cool. He's a cool guy. You know, there's some people that are going to be in the league that are actually older than him because he's 37 years old. So it's just going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to this season with the youth that we do have mixed with a couple of the veteran guys. I think we're going to have a lot better season than what people are expecting.
That's Rays righty Chris Archer, and we certainly look forward to what's in store for him and the rest of his team this season. Now, at the dinner, several MLB standouts were recognized, including Jim Thome, Tim Raines, Gene Michael, and Jim Cott. And I asked Cott, who faced Ted Williams in his career, about getting inducted into the pitcher's wing of the Williams Museum.
Well, and getting to know him, I think just being connected with that name. You know, in the early days, there wasn't cable television. So, you know, Ted Williams to me was a picture on a baseball card. And then when I finally faced him in 1959, then I got to know him, actually met him on a golf course up here in northern Florida one day, and then I spoke at the opening of his tunnel in Boston in the late 90s. So, you know, I always had great respect for it went beyond just as a hitter, you know, with his service to the country and, you know, all the compliments he's got for what he was as a war hero. That to me was as impressive, probably more so than what he did as a ball player.
What was he like as a man since you got to know him?
Well, he was John Wayne in a baseball uniform. That's about the simplest way I think that we can describe it. You know, there are some players, older players, you approach them, you know, very cautiously and hello, Mr. So-and-so. And when Ted was always one of those guys that as soon as you were one of him, a ball player, you were just one of the guys. And he'd sit down, talk hitting and pitching with you till the sun went down. And I think that's what I always appreciated about him.
I remember a conversation I had many years ago with Joe Coleman, who played for him when he managed.
Sure.
And Joe always talked about how, you know, he was one of the few pitchers who got along with, right. with yeah. Ted. What was your rapport like with a guy like that who obviously loved hitting as much as anything about the game?
Well, just the time we crossed paths, you know, I'd always say, Mr. Williams, what do you mean, Mr. Williams? I know you lefty, you try to throw me that curveball. And then we would, I had the thrill of filling in for Bob Costas at his radio show, Costas Coast to Coast, and I still have it on cassette. I'd like to get it changed to CD, but it's interviewing he and Bobby Doerr at the 91 All-Star game, and that was exciting stuff.
Where are some of your other great moments as a broadcaster? Because we know what a tremendous playing career you had.
Well, of course, I had the thrill of doing Derek Jeter's last home game, and that's probably the most enjoyable game I've ever done. There were some good ones there during my run with the Yankees, Boomer's perfect game, and, you know, some other, you know, key games at the 13-inning job that Derek dove into the stands and chopped up his nose, games like that. But, I think just following the Yankees for those years when they were so good was such a treat coming to the ballpark every day when you realize the great announcers like Bai Sam with the Phillies for years announced games for teams that lost 100 games every year. And they, you know, here for 13 years, the Yankees either won or had a good shot at winning every year.
Baseball continues to change. New commissioner Rob Manfred taking over. If you were in his shoes, what would you like to see, since you've seen so much of the game, to continue to improve it?
Well, I exchanged emails with Rob. I've known Rob. Say hello. The pace of play issue, I would like to see him put more emphasis on a hitter's clock more than a pitcher's clock. I wish they could find a company that could manufacture a glove that didn't need refastening after every pitch. Hitters keep 1 foot in the box. Stop the Music for a hitter's walk-up song. I wish they could cut down a bit on commercial time between innings, but I think that's one thing. I'd like to see games not take quite as long. If it's a good game, that's one thing, but there's too much dead time. And then I'd really love to see every homestand, at least one game, played on an afternoon with no music, no sound effects, just be able to come out early and listen to batting practice, listen to the ball hit the bat, and also on the World Series, have two of the weekend games being day games. That would be my wish list.
That's Jim Cott, Ted Williams Hall of Fame inductee, and hopefully soon the Veterans Committee of the Hall in Cooperstown will add him as well. At the Ted Williams dinner, Gene Michael, longtime Yankee, was recognized for lifetime achievement. Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times and I spoke with Michael about receiving such an honor.
I saw him play when I was a kid. And then I got to know him through the golf outing up in Hernando. I got to know him up there. They had the golf outing at Black Diamond. That's what I was playing. Right. I got to know him. And the two things I remember about him is that he wasn't always right, but he was honest. And the other thing I remember is that he was never jealous of the modern player. And I that's part of what I'm going to tell him tonight. He was really something. He was really, really something. We got lucky with some things, and I helped George with patience. You know, we traded some of our young players, but I think we traded the right ones and kept the right ones. You get lucky with things, though, you get through. The players we kept were very durable too, if you remember. All of them were really durable. Look at Mariano and Derek and Pettit and Bernie. I actually think there should be a core five. Bernie's part of that thing, too. And look at Posada with that on base and slug. Switch hitter, great arm. You don't get that many players all together at one time, you know. Usually something happens, somebody gets hurt, somebody gets traded away, and then you lose some of your strength where you don't have that many. But we got lucky with some players. We got lucky with some trades too, you know. But the theme was Ted Williams on base percentage.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the theme.
All right. Knowing how much you value on base, and obviously offense has kind of dropped off.
It kills the starting pitcher for the other team. It kills the starting pitcher. When you take pitches and take, you get a bunch of Giambis in your lineup or Ricky Henderson's in your lineup, you know, whoever it is. We didn't have Ricky at that time. But you get a bunch of those guys in there, and they kill starting pitchers.
Would bring, though, back the run scoring is way down over the last several years. The strikeouts keep going up. Why do you think that is? I mean, you have guys – You remember watching guys like Ted, and it seems like that game has changed in that regard.
I think the strike zone's getting a little bit bigger. Just a little bit bigger. That's part of it, but that's not the only thing. I think sometimes players get strong, you know, and then all of a sudden the pitchers catch up. So it's a funny game. There's not one reason for it, but... And it runs a little bit in cycles, you know. It changes from maybe a 5 or 6 year run. The next, you know, maybe 8 or 9 years, it'll run the other way.
That's Gene Stick Michael, now recognized in the Ted Williams Hitters Hall of Fame at Tropicana Field. Now, while those honored this past weekend have had great success at the major league level, some others are still looking to get to the big leagues.
It's on the rise. Taking a look at Rays minor leaguers.
We continue on our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast, and baseball winter ball in Australia is complete. There were 4 Rays minor leaguers who competed, and one of them was the player of the year for the Rays in their system this past season, and that's Johnny Field. Johnny, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
Tell me when you learned that you were getting to go to play in Australia. Was it before or after you were named the Rays minor league player of the year?
Oh, it was much before. It was about midway. I got promoted up to Port Charlotte about sometime, I believe, in July. And we're on a road trip playing in Palm Beach. And the four of us were heading to the gym, actually, to go get a workout in during the day, and the manager, Jerry Sandberg, called to the front of the bus with four of us and just briefly mentioned how the four of our names were being tossed around to go play winter ball in Australia, and he asked us to kind of think about it and collect our thoughts and get back to him on if we'd want to do it or not. So I remember we all kind of talked about the gym, and later that day we were playing a game. We went to his office, and I think we told him right then and there that they'd all be wanting to do it, and it just kind of went from there.
Now, had you been overseas for any other reason before this? And if so, where had you been before Australia?
Yeah, when I was in college at University of Arizona, my sophomore summer, I was fortunate enough to have been selected to play for the collegiate national team with Team USA. And that summer, we traveled to Cuba and played the Cuban national team in a five-game series in Havana. And then we also traveled to Holland, right outside of Amsterdam, and played the World Championships there. So those have been the only two other countries I've been to for baseball. I went to a couple countries in Europe last offseason as well and traveled, but first time in Australia for me.
How did this compare?
This was incredible, man. It was going into it, we didn't really know what to expect, but it was awesome. We had a blast from the start to the finish. Just everything, we were taking everything. We were over there playing baseball, and it was pretty much like a paid vacation for us. We're playing baseball on the weekends and getting a lot out of it and getting our work in during the week, practicing, going to gym, but then we're also out trying to do as much as we can and being tourists and not staying in the room at all, trying to get out and see as many beaches and do as many things as we could. So it was a great experience for all four of us.
You mentioned playing baseball on the weekend. So how many games do you end up playing a week there for our fans who may not be familiar with the setup?
Just four games a week, which is kind of nice. Because, I mean, you sit down at the full season and play about 140 games. So going there, it would have been a little difficult, I think, if we're playing every single day. But, I mean, we're only playing typically Thursday through Sunday. Or sometimes you play Friday and doubleheader Saturday and then Sunday. So play four games on the weekend, and then the other 3 days you're pretty much off. You'll have one practice usually the night before the series starts. So you usually have about two completely days off to kind of relax and, like I said, go out and sightsee and do what you want. And then you've got to be ready to go for 4 days a week when you have the games on the weekends.
Johnny Field is with us. He's on our This Week in Race Baseball podcast discussing his recent trip to play winter ball in Australia. Since you did get to see the sights, give me an idea of what your favorite sights were and what are your memories culturally?
Well, in the league, there's six teams in the league, and the way it's set up is every single team has a bye weekend. And we're fortunate where our bye weekend was about midway through the season, so we, the four of us were trying to plan out what to do on that bye weekend because we didn't practice anything like that. And we decided to go down to the Great Barrier Reef up along the East Coast, and we went to an area called Hamilton Island, which is kind of just an isolated island where it's and take a trip out to the reef. And so we did that for four nights and were able to scuba dive and snorkel and go to a beach called Whitehaven Beach, which is ranked one of the best beaches in the world. And I would say that's by far probably the memory that stood out the most I'll have for the rest of my life. And I was just incredible seeing water that clear and sand that white. And then we also took a trip, a couple of us, right at the end of the year, we did a kind of a spontaneous trip where we went to New Zealand for about 3 days, right after series is over. We got on a plane and checked out New Zealand, which is about a 3-hour flight from Australia, and saw the culture there. So I think those two trips were the two things that are standing out the most to me.
You played for Brisbane. What was, since most of us don't know many of the cities in Australia, what was Brisbane like?
It was awesome. Brisbane, it was one of my favorite cities by far. The only thing with Brisbane is all the population in Australia is along the coast, so all the big cities are on the coastline. Brisbane didn't really have beaches in the city. You have to drive about 45 minutes either north or south to get to the nice beaches, but the city itself was awesome. They have a downtown area there. There's a river running through the city with lots of restaurants, and the area they put us at was a great area too, the apartments we were in. And I mean, playing at the ballpark was awesome, because this year the new CEO took over and brought in lots of sponsorships, and we had great, great fan support this year. I mean, we'd pack it in just about every single night and had lots of kids coming out, and it was just a great place playing in Brisbane.
What was a favorite food of yours in Australia, or a favorite place to eat, and why?
Well, the CEO of the team would take us out quite a bit to lunches and dinners, and we had a Chinese spot we'd go to quite a bit that was really good. Tried a bunch of new stuff there, like duck and quail, things I've never tried in my life that's really good. And the four of us, we'd eat a lot of sushi there, because Australia is actually a lot more expensive to live there and eat there compared to the States. So we were always trying to find a best bargain for our buck, and there's a couple sushi places where we can get all you can eat for only about $25, which is pretty cheap for Australia. So we ate quite a bit of sushi over there. But we're just trying. I mean, my roommate Getzman, he was always eating kangaroo, which is like a steak over there. I tried a little bite of it. It was different, but we were trying to try as many different things as we could. But I would say sushi and the Chinese spot were the two places we ate the most that were really good.
Did you pick up a good Australian accent you can share with our fans?
I think so, a little bit. I learned a lot of the sayings they use that you never hear over here. Obviously, they call everyone their mate instead of your friend or your buddy. It's what's up, mate. And then if you say, like, hey, they use the term too easy all the time. So if it's like, hey, thanks a lot, man, I appreciate it. Oh, don't worry, it's too easy. It's little things like that that just kind of throws you off. Or they'll say, instead of how you doing, they'll say, how you going. And the first time I heard that, I was like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm doing pretty well, but. So you learn to say little things like that, that they kind of change around. But, by the end of the time, I would try to order food and talk as if they thought I was Australian. I think I did a pretty decent job of hiding my American accent towards the end of the trip.
Again, Johnny Field with us on our This Week in Race Baseball podcast, recently back from Australia. Now, you were there, as you mentioned, with Grandon Getzman and Max Tisenbaum and Tommy Coyle. Brady Williams was over there too. So how much did it help to have someone you were familiar with on the coaching side?
Oh, it was awesome. Brady was awesome. I didn't really know him too well. I met him at Instructs 1 year and then talked to him at spring training a little bit. But going into the trip, I didn't really know him that well. But we're around him all the time. The four of us, along with Brady and his wife who came out, were all in the same apartment building on the same floor. So Brady was awesome. He'd have us over for dinner some nights and cook for us. He loved to cook. And then we'd go do like individual workouts with him, kind of the four of us would go to the field and do some hitting. And he was really proactive and hands-on with us. And he's really big on just getting there early, let us get our work in, do what we got to do, and then have the rest of the day to ourselves. And he was kind of the same way as us. Like, he wanted to do what had to be done, but he was also trying to go out and sightsee and take things in. So it was great having him there, and all the other guys on the team loved him too, because he wasn't there just for the Rays guys. He was there to help out all the guys on the Brisbane, the Bandits team. And I mean, he was able to help out a lot of guys and get them better, and we really enjoyed having him there.
You put up good numbers, Johnny. And again, we're chatting with Johnny Field, who was the Rays minor league player of the year, just back from winter ball in Australia. 291, 6 homers, 14 steals. What's the quality of baseball like in that league? Can you compare it to anything you've seen so far?
Yeah, you know, going into the league, I was based off hearing from other people and stuff. I heard that the quality wasn't going to be all that great. Like, I mean, I heard it'd be kind of equivalent to like a short season A or low A type ball. But I was actually pretty impressed with the quality competition over there, especially the pitching side. Like, I thought that we'd be seeing arms left and right. They were kind of arms that weren't very good that you could kind of just feast off of. But, I mean, you really didn't see too many arms that weren't that good. I mean, most of the arms there, I'd compare them to high AA type arms where guys knew how to pitch, knew how to mix speeds. And, I mean, you'd be facing quite a bit of pitchers that were ex-AAA guys that got to the big leagues. We faced quite a bit of big leaguers that got up with Australia or this and that. And, I mean,
I was pretty impressed with the competition level. There's a lot of guys that if they were a little bit older and their stuff wasn't as good, they still knew what they were doing. They knew how to pitch and knew how to get you out. And the competition level was exceeded my expectations from when I got there.
So where do you think your game grew, and how much does this whole experience help you in 2015?
I really worked on trying to work on my whole game, as every little part of it, especially stealing bases. I tried to work on better jumps and better leads and things along those lines. Defense, hitting, just everything I tried to improve on a little bit. I tried to tell myself that obviously you always want to go out and put up good numbers wherever you're at, but I told myself that this still is the off season. I know just being out here and getting live reps, I finished with close to 200 at bats. I know just that's the best thing you can do in the off season. It's better than working out or hitting in a cage, getting live at bats. I knew just seeing live pitching, getting 200 bats is going to help me out for when I get back to spring training and this upcoming season. So I think just being out and playing along with still working out, getting in the gym, and just getting reps is what's going to help me out most for this upcoming season.
Well, we look forward to seeing you in Port Charlotte. Have a very good rest of your off season, and congratulations on a good stretch in Australia.
Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate it.
That's Johnny Field, one of four Rays minor leaguers to recently come back from Australia. The others are catcher Max Tizenbaum, outfielder Grandon Getzman, and infielder Tommy Coyle. And I spoke with Coyle as well about the experience of playing in Australia.
It was definitely a great opportunity, to be able to go to such a unique place halfway around the world and kind of take advantage of our downtime, that being the off season, and, kind of go out there and make the most of it. I think we had four good guys who meshed pretty well to go out there, and that definitely helped. And, can't say enough about the Bandits and all the guys and the staff for making it an easy transition for us. And, it was tough leaving there and all those guys. So we had a blast.
He mentioned to me that he had done some traveling overseas before this. What kind of experience had you had playing baseball or just traveling overseas before going to Australia?
From a baseball standpoint, I've never traveled anywhere quite like that to play. I think everywhere I've played has pretty much been in the States, but, I've been to Canada and Aruba on vacation last year, and that's pretty much the only places I've been outside the country. So
what's the most memorable part of the trip from a cultural and from a traveling standpoint for you?
I would say the Great Barrier Reef. I'm pretty sure that's probably what Johnny said if I had to guess. But I think going to the Great Barrier Reef was probably one of the coolest things I've ever done, as far as, seeing such a unique place and being able to go snorkel in the water and kind of just, you hear about it and see about it on TV, and you kind of always wish to go there. And, it's tough being halfway across the world, but I'm glad we had the opportunity and took advantage of it and, made the trip over there.
Where did you want to grow as a baseball player when you went on a trip like this, and what do you think you took out of it from that end?
I think just, going out there and playing an extra 40 or so games is, that's always good. You get all those extra at-bats, and, every at-bat you can have the opportunity to learn something or feel something that could help you and help your career. But I just wanted, get more at-bats under my belt, and then kind of take a step back from the season I had in Port Charlotte this year and kind of reflect on what I wanted to work on. And, it was nice being able to go put those things in the play in real games instead of, most guys, you just have to swing it out in the cage or kind of wait till spring training to work on those things. So it was nice to be able to go out and do that in a game and, kind of have it more meaningful.
You put up phenomenal numbers in Australia. 333, 8 homers is more than you hit in the States this past year. You stole 11 bases, too. What do you think was the big difference, and what was the competition of baseball like?
The competition was, it was pretty good. I was kind of expecting it to not be as good as it was, just from what I've heard from different people. But I was actually pretty impressed with all the players there. They're, you know, it's a bunch of AA guys. There's some big league guys and some guys that play in the different countries. They play in their big leagues. So we saw some of those guys, and I was definitely impressed with the competition from what I'd heard. I was home for a little bit before I left, and, you know, I was working with my brother who plays for the mm-hmm. Red Sox, and, you know, I was just talking to him and, you know, working on some stuff kind of mentally and mechanically at the plate. And then, you know, I think just kind of just playing the game more instead of worrying about, you know, results so much. I wanted to just, you know, kind of go out there and play and have fun. And, you know, it's a lot easier to kind of do your thing when you're having a little looser and enjoying yourself. And you know, I think being over there helped that. And that's another thing I'm going to try and, you know, take with me going into spring training and the season coming up this year.
I would think after playing last year in Port Charlotte that you probably would be in Montgomery this year, and the manager there is Brady Williams, and he was in Australia with you. So how much do you think that helps, having had experience with Brady so far?
Yeah, it was awesome having Brady out there. I've only worked with him a little bit in instructs after my first season, and then, you know, from whenever I work with him in spring training, which is, you know, a little bit here and there. So it was nice having Brady out there, and he definitely had a blast with us. We were together a lot, so it was definitely cool, you know, working with, you know, hopefully my boss for next year. So that was definitely an awesome experience.
In terms of where you want to grow this year, tell me a little bit about, you know, what you want to kind of take into next season and how helpful your brother has been, obviously. It certainly doesn't hurt to have another member of your family playing professional baseball.
Yeah, it's definitely nice having a brother that plays professional baseball. And, you know, whenever we're home together, we're working out. I always have a workout partner. I got a guy to throw with. I got a guy to, you know, talk to about pretty much anything in baseball. And then, so it definitely makes it nice. So we got to work out together before I left and before he left for the fall league, and we got some good work in, and that was nice to get in before we kind of went our separate ways for the off season. And then, I'm just looking to kind of continue what I was doing out in Australia as far as, you know, my mentality at the plate, and you know, a couple small mechanical like cues that I think about. So I just want to continue doing that. Take that into the season. I think that'll help me out a lot.
Now, being that you already played 45 games this winter, do you handle the rest of the offseason any differently than you normally would in terms of the reps that you get before you go to spring training? Do you take a week or so off to kind of let your body refresh? How do you handle it?
Yeah, I think I'm just going to take about, well, the week's almost pretty much up now, but think about what would have been a week off and then kind of get back into it. I mean, we were only playing four games a week. So we were playing, you know, on the weekends. So that's still less than what you're used to during the normal season. So, you know, I'm going to start ramping it back up and, you know, getting in the cage almost every day. But I do feel like I haven't played all winter. You know, I got a little bit, you know, I got those reps in that I don't need to be in there, you know, quite as much. You know, give the body a little bit of rest because it's been a long year. But still, I'll get it back going here and you know, be ready to go in a few weeks.
And you mentioned playing 4 days a week. Is that somewhat of an adjustment, you know, because a lot of guys, they get used to the pro ball experience and they're used to, and it's you know, you're accustomed to playing every single day. Is it almost hard for the, you know, when you have 2 or 3 days off between games, then just pick it right back up and get back into game mode?
Yeah, that was actually a pretty big adjustment for myself. I was kind of used to playing every day and getting your swings in every day, getting ground balls every day, and kind of, you know, it's easy to stay sharp, and even though you're not thinking about it. So, you know, those first couple weekends, where we would play on the weekend, and then you have, you know, a few days off, or we'd have one practice in between weekends. And that's kind of difficult because you're used to doing it every day. And I think it helped me because I learned to, you know, get my work in without having to be able to do it every single day. So it's more of a, I think that'll help me going into season two. You know, you kind of learn to get more out of, or learn to do what you need to do without, you know, being there all day or being going at it every single day.
Well, I appreciate a few minutes on our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast, and we look forward to seeing you in Port Charlotte in a few weeks.
Thanks, Neil. Appreciate it.
That's infielder Tommy Coyle, who hit .333 with 8 homers in Australia in winter ball. Now, don't forget to tune in this Thursday for the first Countdown to Opening Day show from 7 to 8 p.m. Dave and Andy will be joined on 620 WDAE and the Rays Radio Network by Kevin Cash and Alex Cobb. That show, by the way, will be posted as a podcast on Friday if you happen to miss it. Now remember, you also can continue to read our blog, raysradio.moblogs.com, and also follow us on Twitter at Rays Radio. Thanks for joining us, and we'll speak with you soon.
Thank you for listening to the This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. For more on the Rays this offseason, visit our blog at raysradio.mlblogs.com. Follow us on Twitter at Rays Radio.